webcasting to the world.
You remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for September the 29th, 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, and we're with William Blake. We say, a truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, bringing you more gospel, CPR is the heretic's hope, the preacher's paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Michael Williams.
Good evening, Barris Bartlett. I am doing wonderful. I have made the big journey back to Houston to retrieve the remainder of my things in my apartment there, and had a real gracious friend volunteer to make this 18-hour trek pulling a trailer back from Houston. So I've got everything here now, a lot of things wrapped up and packaged up and bubble wrapped. It's got to be undone now, but I got all the time in the world to do that. I got that trip over with. So, yeah, and it's still nice and warm in Florida, as it is, I think, most of the nation still yet. Seems like we're still experiencing August weather.
Now, Mike, we're in the middle of a series. I don't know if we're in the middle near the beginning or in the middle near the end, but we're in the middle of a series addressing a letter that was put up on the web focusing on you and your parents' shortcomings. So we've been getting emails in and responses, all kinds, you know, phone, email, written on the Facebook page of Friends of Mike Williams, on our own website, www.gospelrevolution.com. We have sure had some responses, mate.
Barris, I'm sure that we have. This is really focused on the difference between the gospel and Christianity. And everybody's got a front row observation deck view of a very real-time separation between Christianity and the gospel, as has happened between me and my friend Jim Richards. There's just gut level response, because a lot of people have experienced this, and they know how cruel it can be, how cruel it can feel, how justified it is by those that perpetrate these crimes of the heart. And this really is a crime of the heart validated by the Bible, and it's tough. I met a friend 2 years ago at the gym I worked out at, and he's a big guy. We started talking about training, and we became pretty quick friends. We didn't see each other much except at the gym, but we seemed to have a lot in common. He is 6'6". I'm about the same height, and his name is Michael. And guess what? My name is Michael. So there was just a whole lot of things. I won't mention that he's 23 years younger than me. So this is the one thing we didn't have in common for sure. So when I got ready to do this move, he very graciously, this part of the move, and man, he's told me, he said, man, says, Mike, you should have told me you needed help. Said, I would have made this move happen for you. I would have done this, I'd have done that. And, and you wouldn't have had all this trouble. And but anyway, he volunteered to get me down here once I got there and pack everything up, and he did. Oh my gosh, what a gentleman! And got one of his friends to help him, and basically all I did is orchestrate all this and make sure things were in boxes. And they were rushing me because they were carrying things out of this place. And after we got here, we had a long trip here, of course, 18 hours behind the wheel, which he drove a great deal of that. And pulling a trailer is a rough job. I'm telling you, it's a tense, terrible job. And but we got it done. We pulled in here at 3:30 in the morning, Sunday morning. I left here Thursday and came back on Saturday, 36 hours on the road altogether. So we were sitting here last night talking, and he's asking me, you know, we've not spent enough time together to really know a whole lot about each other. So we talked all the way down here. And then I started sharing a little bit about the gospel and what I do more and more. As most people know, that's not the first thing I'm going to do when I'm talking to somebody. I know a lot of people find that very strange, that I want to share the gospel, but it's not the first thing I do when I meet people. But I took the time to get to know this this gentleman, and boy, I'm so glad I did. And then as I was speaking to him last evening, he realized that he was in a place where he could share something that he'd never told anybody. He told me he'd never told anybody. He never talks about it at all. And when he was just a child, his mother became a Jehovah's Witness. And he was just a boy, and suddenly he couldn't celebrate Christmas, and you know, he couldn't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance. He had to sit down at probably anything that you could celebrate. He couldn't celebrate his birthday anymore. You know, no Christmas presents. Everything changed for this child. So
I guess he at that point he realized Santa Claus wasn't real.
Well, that's what he was told. He was told it was Satan's holiday, you know, and
Gee, if you just rearrange the letters, Santa, Satan.
Yeah, exactly. he was, you know, a very obedient boy. He was at home till he's 26. He was, didn't smoke or chew or run around with girls that do. And
where did that Southern saying come from? I mean,
it had to be Tennessee. It had to be Tennessee.
Had to be Tennessee. Golly, keep going. I just don't let me go down a rabbit hole here, Michael. I mean, over here, friends, you don't just smoke tobacco; you chew on it.
Yeah,
I mean, you chew it as well, and then you spit. I mean, there are people walking around Nashville, Tennessee, and they carry a little bottle with them into which they spit.
I know.
Oh my! It's just sorry, and I can understand. I mean, I didn't see any girls that do, but I'm pretty sure there's a few around. So anyway, I'm sorry, mate.
So he started going out with some of his friends when he was 26 years old and visiting, just, you know, going to a club, getting a drink, you know, not drinking a lot, just not getting drunk, just getting a drink. And the church elders found out about it, and they called a meeting with he and his mother and family. His sister was in the church too, and they voted to do what the very same thing that Jim decided to do with me. Now, my situation wasn't so severe. Jim was always a very good friend, and it did hurt, and it was tough. But he was sitting here telling this story, and I realized how cruel this doctrine is. You know, we've gone over a lot of very cruel doctrines that Christianity has used some of the Bible. They ignore the gospel and use some of the Bible to perpetrate some of the most horrible crimes against the heart, at least.
And the intriguing thing is, and I love this statement that you phrased and coined, if your heart is kinder than your doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guess which one's wrong. So, so as we sat here last night and talked, I watched a 6'6" muscle guy sit in my living room and break into tears, telling me how that he can no longer see his own mother, his sister, and his mother made him pack his things, and he had never been on his own in his life. And at 26 years old, he moved out of the house onto the streets. He had no place to go. And sat here and cried just last night, telling me this story. So as we got on this morning, I'm telling you, this is just running through my heart and my mind so much. And, you know, the cruelty of this doctrine. And it's like, so I thought, you know, well, let's address this doctrine in and of itself, not what has been done, but what about this doctrine? What let's talk about this doctrine today, Barris, as we do this particular segment. I think it's very important that people understand that this is, number one, it's not a as cut and dried as people that use it think that it is.
Just for our family, we recorded a lot of information last week, and we're going to cut across to that shortly. But right now, because of Michael's visitor in Florida, his friend Michael, and because of what the whole idea of shunning or dis. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, it's a you're disfellowshipped.
Yes.
If you are in, say, the Amish or Mennonite or one of those communities, you are shunned. If you are in the Brethren, you are read out. I mean, isn't it funny? We use all of these bloody terms to essentially we try to make it as nice as we can, relying on one or two verses in the whole Bible, in order to make us sound good and the shunned person sound bad. But we're going to cross over to what we finished recording last week. But before we do, this thing is very fresh in Mike's mind because of what happened last night. And so we're just going to go here and we're going to look at the whole thing of shunning.
You know, back before our Canada conference this year,
I'm going to always remember that as our Derek conference.
Yeah, for sure. And it really was our Derek conference. And it was so wonderful to hear someone who had only started researching the gospel 8 months previously to stand up and teach such a great understanding. I mean, things that he'd never learned from me or you or anybody else. It's just he... Once he understood the concept, it was just amazing.
Reinforced the concept that the truth is in all of our hearts.
Exactly, because it came out of this young man. Derek is now 30 years old, and my goodness, everyone was just completely enthralled with the things he had to say. And of course, he came up with the banner statement for that conference by saying that I am completely unqualified to be a sinner.
We are completely unqualified to be sinners. Oh, my gosh.
It was so wonderful. And so that gives you the range that that this young man works in. And so he was teaching on, a couple of different subjects that if you haven't got those, you need to purchase those, the MP3s or whatever for that conference, because they're There's some good things in there. I even taught. You might get something out of that.
you go to www.gospelrevolution.com and go to the store, and you look for a product called Summer Conference 2016, I believe it is, held in Calgary, and you will get all of Mike and all of Derek and a little bit of me. And let me tell you, because I'm in it. I mean, I saved it, really.
He is indeed.
I saved it, really. I mean, it was going to really be a mess until I... But you're going to get some wonderful stuff.
Yeah. And that's why we do this, folks. It's for your benefit. We really... Of course, I can't tell you that we don't enjoy doing this, because going to Canada and these folks up there and the fellowship and just the friendship, oh, my goodness, it's so wonderful. But Derek had brought up to me before the conference, and I have to admit, I still haven't gone through it thoroughly. I have gone back and looked at it, though, and it is there. But this whole thing comes from a declaration that Paul made concerning the man who was committing a sexual sin with his stepmother, I do believe it was. And in that, Paul made the statement to do all of these things that these churches now use, from shunning to writing them out and disfellowship, whatever the term is that they come up with.
Whatever the term is, the effects are always the same. It breaks families up and destroys just destroys people.
It's hard. There's no reconciliation in it, because, well, there just is none.
How about that? There's no reconciliation. You know, Paul said, Mike, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, and he has now given us this ministry of reconciliation. And you just said there is no, oh my gosh.
No, there's no reconciliation in it. And the, you know, it's amazing. I started noticing when I first got involved as a young man into Christianity that they offered me all of the graciousness in the world, that, oh, it doesn't make any difference what you've done. No matter what you've done, Jesus will wipe that sin out and you're accepted, and we'll deal with you as though you never did anything wrong. And you don't have to earn your salvation. It's a free gift. It's given to you. All you got to do is say this little prayer. It's like Joel Osteen says, this little tiny prayer is the difference between eternity in heaven and eternity in hell. And it's just, but he only gives less than 30 seconds to it. It's like, I think you ought to give the whole hour to this if it is the difference between an eternity in heaven and eternity in hell. Goodness, I could go down a lot of rabbit holes right now, because I'm really broken by what I heard last night, Paris, and it makes me angry to hear these guys get by with what they get by with, and nobody ever challenges them on it. But the Gospel Revolution does challenge them, and we want to do this as graciously as we can. But we want you to know that when we address somebody about their doctrine, we also follow that up with, let us reassure you that this person who did this is righteous, holy, and perfect, and accepted in Christ.
The person who does the shunning and the person who is shunned.
Exactly. The gospel finds no difference in these, and that's the sanity of the gospel, and that is the insanity of Christianity. Oh, good title, Insanity of Christianity.
Jeff, I know you listen to this sped up, but Jeff.
The Insanity of Christianity, so whether the title of this or a good series to come up, it would be a good one. So, that's where they take this from. And Paul does say all of these things that they do. But that's in 1 Corinthians. they completely ignore what 2 Corinthians says about the very same situation, Barris, as far as we can tell. And Paul actually rebuked the people who did this in this situation. And he tells them, why are you doing this? Wait a minute. You should be treating him like a brother. You should be, loving on him. You should, what in the world are you doing? But Derek pointed out to me that Paul made reference to his first letter. And again, I've not studied this out. I've looked. It is there. But Paul, making reference to his first letter, said, I said these things to test you. Now think about this just a moment. This sounds very much like Paul. Paul, who had taught these people the gospel of grace and peace and that everybody's in, nobody's out, thinking, I wonder if they really get it or not. Okay, I'm going to use this guy, and we're going to see what's really in these folks' hearts. So he tells them, you need to run him off. You don't even eat with him. Separate from such a one. Stay away from him. And then waited to see if they would say, well, no, Paul, let me tell you, gospel revolutionaries do it to me all the time. I'll say something off the wall and they'll say, now wait, Mike, now wait a minute. That doesn't sync up with the fact that we're one. That doesn't jive. Well, these folks, they obeyed Paul. And then Paul comes back and says, why'd you do it? Can you imagine the impact in these people's lives that the very man who told them to do this comes back? So why is it okay to emphasize 1 Corinthians and not 2 Corinthians?
Well, people who practice disfellowshipping don't give a rip about Corinthians. What they care about is things like Jesus, I have not come to bring peace but a sword.
Yeah.
There was a guy called Bell, I think his name was. And if you go up onto YouTube and just use your search for Bell, Jehovah's Witness and Disfellowshipping or Shunning, you'll find a fantastic video which has received hundreds of thousands of views now. And essentially, Bell was a watchtower. Watchtower is another euphemism for Jehovah's Witnesses, watchtower representative who at one of their conventions explained why you need to put a sword between yourself and your loved ones. It was recorded in the 2013 God's Word is Truth District Conventions in California. And the speaker instructs witnesses to shun family members, even children, as an act of loyalty. Loyalty to bloody who? And he says that, and here is the joke of it all. He lays the blame for the heartache of shunning squarely at the feet of those who are shunned.
Well, of course.
And he encouraged his people, resist self-blame. Don't blame yourself. It was those disfellowshipped people who must be blamed. Now, in the Watchtower rag itself, in the Watchtower magazine itself, I'm trying really hard here, mate. It talks a lot about emotional blackmail, and a lot of people who have belonged to the Watchtower group, called the Jehovah's Witnesses, often will tell you that this is nothing more or less an emotional blackmail. And those who oppose Watchtower's practices of shunning former members say the purpose of disfellowshipping is not to restore the person's relationship with God. And to understand that statement, we need to understand that if you do not approach God through the Jehovah's Witnesses, according to the Jehovah's Witnesses, then you can't approach God. But Its purpose is not to restore the person's relationship with God, but to blackmail the person into returning to the organization by holding his family hostage. And that is exactly, in Bell's talk on YouTube, exactly what he says. Now, this is in stark contrast to any concept of reconciliation, particularly in view of the fact that my restoration with God does not depend on my behavior now, but it actually happened 2,000 years ago, didn't it, Mike?
That was restoration, according to Paul's teaching that Christ would restore all things unto himself. It's not man's job to restore people. It was God's job, and his job's done. It is a completed work of the cross. Now, it's also bears, as you pointed out the last time, I think it bears repeating, especially this morning, since we're addressing this particular part of it, is the biblical and or scriptural reasons for doing this and or not doing it. And you pointed out that Jesus also gave a prescription as to how to deal with someone. And now, I'm not recalling exactly what the situation was, but if you could tell us that again, what did Jesus say to do in a situation where someone needs correction? And I'm not even sure what it was correction for. Maybe you can tell us.
Well, Michael, we know that anything Christ did before the cross relates to his adherence to truth preceding the cross. In other words,
yes,
people love to take, oh, Jesus did that, said that, went here, did that. And they want to assign that to our Christian rights and wrongs. Fact of the matter is, he was doing it in character before he took that law, nailed it to his cross, and totally turned the whole darn thing upside down. So I say to people who want to stay in this, they want to refer to Jesus' actions before the cross, I say, well, let's be consistent.
Yeah,
if you want to take this, let's be consistent. At least be consistent, because if you're not, you're an idiot, or you are prevaricating. You're an opportunist. So we find this in Matthew 18, and this is Jesus' prescription, as you said, for how to shun disfellowship, deal with those with whom we believe we have a problem.
Did Jesus say what the problem was? Is he saying specifically what the issue was?
No, he just makes a blanket statement, says, hey, listen, anyone who has something against anyone, this is how you deal with it. But it's in the middle of a chapter, and when I say in the middle, it's preceded and followed by references to children.
Wow.
And it is in response to a definite question by his disciples. They came to him saying, Matthew 18, verse 1, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Then Jesus calls a little child to him, set him in the middle of them, and said, assuredly, I say unto you, unless you are converted and become, that word converted in the Greek is strepho, it simply means to be turned around, unless you are turned around and become as little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Now you can imagine his listeners. This is about as ridiculous a statement as, unless you become born again, when Jesus was speaking to Nicodemus in John chapter 3. And Nicodemus, intelligent bloke that he was, says, what? How do I go into my mother's womb and get born again? Anyway, here Jesus says, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a millstone hung around his neck and were drowned in the depth of the sea. In other words, don't go blagging, don't go BSing, don't go lying, don't go misrepresenting me, don't try and sell off your snake oil to anyone.
In my name, yeah.
In my name. Oh, say that again.
Don't try to do this in my name.
Yeah, absolutely. So whoever receives this little child like this in my name receives me. And guess what? It doesn't say anything about whoever receives this little child, who is born again, who said a magic prayer, who said the sinner's prayer. No, just receives a little child. You know, Jesus, Mike, is all about reconciliation. His focus is always on, and we're going to see that in a minute. But whoever causes one of these little ones to believe in me to sin, it would be better for him just to go out and drown himself, essentially. Now, here, this chapter is replete with so many well-known claims. If your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off. Verse 8. If your eye causes you to sin, cut it out. Come on, guys. I know every man listening to this has looked at a girl once or twice in your life. And you don't worry. Take heed that you don't despise one. He's taking 10 verses to explain how this has to do with misleading people who are precious to him. For the Son of Man, verse 11, has come to save that which was lost. I mean, there are so many common pictures taken out of this chapter, it ain't funny. Later on, we'll see where two or three are gathered in my name. There am I in the midst. Thing is just full of pictures. And the picture we're going to see in a minute is just going to, and I hate to be so dragging it out here, mate, but
here, well, context is what we're all about, man.
I tell you. Oh, it's what do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, the 99, there were 99 that safely lay in the shelter of the... I mean, all of these old hymns are built... crikey. And I get wound
up. You're in flashbacks, aren't you?
You know I am. I'm in row 3 of my church as a child singing that damn hymn. Oh, boy. Moreover, verse 15 and verse 14, he brings us back to the little ones. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. You know, the 99 that are in the fold and the shepherd goes out and finds the lost sheep. It's got to do with children. It's got to do. The whole damn chapter is about children. But anyway, Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Now, I believe you told us last week that your friend hid in the kitchen while you spoke to his wife. Am I right about that?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Well, I just want to contrast that with if your brother sins against you, and surely if your brother is teaching wrong doctrine, and it's causing you to lose your people, your friends, your dependent pastors, your income, your tithing. Surely that's a sin against you, if anything is. Go tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. Sounds like reconciliation to me. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, he's referring here to an Old Testament command. Remember, we're talking about Jesus Christ living under the law.
Doesn't even mean this applies today. What we're saying is there's many ways to look at this. Even if you were to do it, it's not as ironclad to carry out this crime against the heart as many religious folks would make it to be.
And if you are going to take any action, if you're ever going to use Jesus' words before the cross as your behavior mechanism, what would Jesus do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm more than happy to take you up on that.
Yeah, exactly.
But for crying out loud, at least be consistent. Otherwise, you can't blame people for... Anyway.
I heard a video within the last week of a gentleman who was he was reading through these very verses, and he's a gentleman that teaches that nothing changed at the cross, basically. And he read through the verses that you just pointed out about, you know, if your hand offends you, cut it off. If your eye offends you, pluck it out. So he said that Jesus was just talking to the Pharisees, and he kind of made light of losing your hand or your eye during this time. He said, losing a hand, losing an eye was just, I don't remember his words there, but he was inferring that this is kind of nothing to people of Jesus's time.
Can you imagine? that might could have hurt Rembrandt quite a bit.
Exactly. And he said it was the Pharisees who were really concerned about losing an eye or losing a hand. So Jesus wasn't really saying this is what you should do if you're under the law. He was trying to point out to the Pharisees their fault. And
and yet at the very first, in verse 1, it talks about his disciples. He was talking to his disciples privately.
Ooh. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, even in the video, this gentleman states that Jesus was talking to Pharisees, and he wasn't talking to Pharisees. It says he was talking to his disciples, and then said that a lot of people had their hands cut off and their That's daily life for these folks.
Yeah, they couldn't collect. Oh, jeez. It's a good thing you didn't mention the name of this person, because I want to call him
Bonehead of the Day.
We've addressed him before.
I'm sure.
But I don't want to again. But
but I still want to give him the crown of
Bonehead of the Day.
He's got it.
Oh, boy. So what do you do after you go and have a quiet chat over a glass of goat's foam with this guy? Well, if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. Verse 17, and if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Now, you have to remember that the whole concept of shunning is based not on New Testament, a Pauline doctrine. It's based, and you have mentioned this, you mentioned that Paul, between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, appears to have enunciated quite different approaches. And you've also mentioned, Mike, that he had a reason for doing it, to test them.
Yeah.
But here is the words of Jesus. If you want to use the words of Jesus, then at least have the guts to be consistent. He'll be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Well, for crying out loud, guys. Hey, listen, Jehovah's Witness Church, exclusive brethren, Amish, Mennonites. Oh, heck, every darn church, the Catholics, the
they all do.
To any church who practices excommunication.
Yeah.
Remember that every member of the IRS, you have to do it the same way to them. Just think about what I said. You treat them like a heathen and a tax collector. Oh, and don't come the raw prawn with me and tell me that, oh, well, tax collectors were different back then. They were considered to be sellouts. No, the whole Jewish establishment were considered to be sellouts. That's why they couldn't crucify Christ themselves, but they needed to pass it over to the Romans. They were all sellouts. Sure, Matthew, the tax collector, was a sellout. He also happens to be an apostle.
Yeah.
I'm getting too. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. This chapter is so full of things.
Oh, gosh, it is. We're going to have to do a whole series just on this chapter.
I think we are, buddy. We're not going to. I don't even know if we're going to get to what we wanted to get today, but I'm betting we'll get there. How about then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? This chapter is so...
Oh, exactly. I love this one for people who do the forgiveness thing.
Oh, yeah. The servant...
How many times am I supposed to do this?
Yeah.
So how many times was I forgiven before I was shunned? So they got up to 70 times 7 in one day.
Let me tell you, they were doing this a lot, right?
Yeah.
Therefore, Jesus says, verse 23, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. Here we've got another story. But as he was not able to pay, the master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all he had, and payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, "Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all." Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion. There's only one other person in the whole New Testament of whom it is said he was moved with compassion. That was Jesus. And moved with compassion, he healed people. Oh, man. I reckon I got a year's worth of sermons here.
There's at least that in there. I know what Barris's chapter topic will be the next time he does a session.
I'm telling you.
Just this chapter. You know, it'd be great just to go through and just explain each one of these points that Jesus makes. It's, as you say, it's replete with these very commonly quoted Christian values comments. It really is amazing.
And so let's just go to...
So first off, let me... this got my
attention. No, we haven't... Well, okay. But so we've got to come back to the kicker. We have not approached the kicker.
We'll get to the kicker. So first off, before we ever get to the kicker, before we ever get to any shining, before we ever get to, kicking somebody out, long before we ever get to there, we have to forgive them 70 times 7 before you get to that point. You know, when they were testing to see, you know, we had the sound barrier, and they didn't know what would happen when human beings broke the sound barrier. And we didn't know whether, you know, are we going to go into a different world? Or they had no clue.
Nothing. They could have died. They had no idea.
Anything could have happened. They could have disappeared. They didn't have a clue. So the goal was, let's press the limits here just to see what happens. So let's pretend we're scientists.
Let's send Gary up there. Gary's a good bloke, but if he dies, we won't miss him.
Let's pretend we're scientists and we want to figure out what's going to happen after you've been forgiven 70 times in one day, just to see what happens after that. So I'm sorry, my mind's running in wrong directions here, but now we could probably do 70 times 7 in forgiving you for lying, right? You could probably come up with 70 times 7 lies.
I used to be a salesman. I did it for a living.
So, but let me tell you something. When it comes to, quote, as Christians say and religious people say, sexual sin, I'll guarantee you, you're not going to get to 70 times 7.
So. Not if I go to the county fair, I won't.
Yeah.
I'm going to be walking around there as a male.
Exactly. So 70 times 7. So, you know, this is the real gauge, folks. If we're going to be under the law, if we're going to do this issue of forgiveness and sin, let's let this be the postmark for and the mile marker for where does all this other stuff kick in? Where does shunning kick in? Where does disfellowship kick in? Where does friendship end? You know, where does your relationship with people because they've done you wrong, at what point does it kick in? It has to be, this has to be the guide. If we're going to use the law, let's use this law-inspired guide.
There you go. If the Ten Commandments are still in vogue, this must be still in vogue.
This has to be invoked also.
Yeah, if the Ten Commandments are invoked, well, this must be invoked as well.
Exactly, Barris. Let's keep this also. If it's going to be the law, then this has to be the other part of the law. This is how the law is carried out. You must forgive 70 times 7. So, I mean, that means, Barris, that if your husband commits adultery, long before you can divorce him, he has to commit adultery 70 times 7 in one day. So here, I love this. point, this 70 times 7. You know, when is the law going to kick in? When are you going to carry out justice? When are you going to do this? Well, you got to get past 70 times 7 first. And then let's talk about the shunnings. Let's talk about all of these putting people away. And because this is the way, if you're going to carry out the law, this is how it has to be done. And what is the rest of this in this chapter, Barris?
Well, mate, here's where the kicker is. In this whole chapter, Christ uses children, and not just once or twice, but consistently through this chapter, he uses children as some kind of an example.
Yeah, that's
true. But the focal point of the whole chapter is this one verse. And that would be verse 20 of Matthew 18 that says, "For where two or three are gathered together in my name."
Yeah.
Now, Jehovah's Witnesses, you claim that you're gathered together in his name. Exclusive Brethren, Amish, Mennonites, every single group on the face of the planet, multiple thousands of you who all claim that the same Holy Spirit brought you to such different places, who all claim that you're gathered in the name of Jesus, guess what? He's in the midst of you. And you don't even have to be right, but you claim that you're gathered in his name. Here's what Jesus says. "For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them." What is the focus of this chapter? The focus of this whole chapter, and probably a couple of chapters either side if we really went to explore it, it's all about him.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that brings us together is not that we agree. The thing that brings us together is not that we obey. The thing that brings us together is not that we commit. The thing that brings us together is not that one does somebody wrong and somebody else does somebody wrong, even if you have done somebody wrong. If Christ is there, we're one. We're together. That's good news, not bad news, isn't it, Bears?
Oh, that's why I left silence. I had nothing to say.
Bad news for religion, but...
We should play that song, Good News. Who was that? Oh, that was our friend who went down in the plane, overloading his plane.
Bad news for modern man.
Bad news for modern man. My God. If it was bad news for modern man, it was bad news for old men. It was bad.
I think he was referring to the new Bible that had come out, Good News for Modern Man. There has to be a theme here. I mean, Jesus wasn't schizophrenic. There's got to be a point. We may have gotten to the point in that last verse that you pointed out, but like you said, this could have been going on for a chapter before and a chapter after. So we just got to back up and look at the entirety of this to find what is the common theme here, other than just a, let's throw this against the wall. Let's throw that on the wall.
Well, family, you have heard what our next series is going to be. And we're still in the middle of the, or maybe near the beginning, who knows, of the current one. So,
yeah, it'll take us a while to get through this. There's so many wonderful points through here that we can address. Now, look, see, we've got to this issue of shunning. Which we would have never got to that if it hadn't have been for our friend Jim printing this article. So it's really been a treasure trove of places that we can help you see, and you can help others see, the difference between the religion called Christianity and the gospel. Please remember, folks, Christianity is just another religion. In fact, there are multiple thousands of this other religion. And who knows keeping track of how many they are? I don't know. I'm not interested. I think 10's too many. I think 1's too many.
Two. Actually, 2 are too many.
Yes, 2 are too many.
Because 2 puts the lie to the words of Jesus that says, All I ask you to do now is love one another.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Well, we have, we took a big step a few years ago. I took a big step, and there other folks saw the rationale of it. Many questioned it, and they should have, because this was a huge step. And that's when I stopped calling myself a Christian. I had good reason to stop calling myself a Christian. And I
fought that all the way to the end of my ability.
That is true. But not one point did Barris and I have a contentious moment about it on either side. Well, I can't speak for Barris. I mean, he may have been really contentiousing me. I don't know.
Oh, you just nothing. You're nothing. Now talk over me.
But it was a big moment. It's not one that I regret at all. I just hear too many stories of this terrible situation that Christianity has presented to the earth, even though now please understand, we're not saying that there's not good people in Christianity. It's the only thing good about Christianity are the many of the people that are in it. But its doctrines are anti-Christ.
And these people who practice shunning are only doing the honest, logical thing. You cannot take your separation from Jesus or your separation from other. And I mean, if you separate yourself from other people, I think that I think it's pretty clear you're separating yourself from Jesus, because as Paul said, God was in Christ reconciling man to himself, and now we have this ministry of reconciliation.
Yeah.
These people who practice shunning and disfellowshipping and reading out people and everything, all those different names to describe the heinous act of dividing yourself from your fellow human beings. All of them are only doing what is honest. They're only taking what they believe to be right, or what religion believes to actually work, to its logical conclusion. They are actually more honest than your average, denominational person who has never bothered to actually think this out for themselves.
If you reject reconciliation, you must embrace shunning. That's just bottom line.
Say that again.
If you reject reconciliation, you must embrace shunning.
Now, tell me this. How many people reject shunning?
Nobody in the religious community that I know of. There's only one group that I know of, folks. I hate to have to point it out, but the Gospel Revolution is the only group that does not practice shunning.
We don't think that there is a hair breadth of difference between Mother Teresa and Hitler.
Yes, when it comes to reconciliation, that is exactly right.
Now, when it comes to their actions,
huge difference. One praiseworthy, one deserves anything that he got, you know, and way more. We understand that, Nate. And so, just like last night when I was going through this this recovery of a precious 41-year-old man who had held these secrets in his heart in pain all of his life, and of course, you know, the doctrine of hell is very strong in that denomination also, as it is in most all of them. And I told him, I said, you know, let's look at this just a moment. And so we compared, so I asked him, I said, you know, was the cross punishment for sin? Yes. So what's hell? It's punishment for sin. Did Jesus die for the sins of the whole world? Yes. Then why is hell there? And these lights start going on in him, but it's just because of these simple equations that are being brought out. And I asked him, I said, now let's say that hell is real and punishment for sin. We're not talking about a week-long stay in hell. We're talking about eternity in hell with fire that never is quenched.
For 75 years of mistakes, including the mistake of being born in a place where you could not even hear about hell.
And maybe even just one mistake in that 75 years.
Oh, boy.
In people's assumptions, you know. That's all it had to be. That's all it had to be.
Didn't have to be 490.
No, didn't have to be that at all. And I said, okay, so let's paint this picture. I said, all right, I've got a flamethrower. The person who did you wrong, I am so upset about what they did that I am willing to hold the flamethrower while you stand and watch. Now, there's a couple of dynamics.
You are, mate, I don't care what they say about you, Williams. You just plain cruel.
We're a sick puppy here. And I said, I'm going to turn the flamethrower on him. Now, his skin's going to melt off of him time and time again. The pain of it is not going to be 1 ounce less 5 seconds in than it is 5 years from now. And I said, now, how long do you think it would take for you to throw up your hands and scream, that's enough, it's enough, stop, no matter what they had done to you? And he said, well, Michael, I wouldn't even be able to do that. I said, exactly. And yet, this is what Christianity teaches, that people that offend God, that he is going to do this to them for eternity. And we wouldn't even do it ourselves to someone.
And as the hymn writer said, when we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, there's no less time, I mean, ahead of us than there was before us. And that is how long eternal conscious torment is going to last. Just as exactly as long as heaven's going to last. My God.
Folks, this stand that I decided to make, that I was no longer a Christian, I will not support Christianity, I do not affirm Christianity, that took place just several years ago, has been one of the best decisions I've ever made. It has helped me to help others to understand what the gospel is all about. And folks, the gospel is the power of God. And the power of God is not this stuff that we hear about. There's no power in that. But there is power in reconciliation. The gospel is the power of God unto salvation. Not redemption, because the gospel is the story about redemption that'll save your soul. The gospel is not a prophecy about the future. It's a declaration about the past. It's a declaration of what has already happened. Please don't anybody tell you, well, the gospel says, and point to something happening today or something that'll happen in the future. Gospel means good news. You watch the news. The news means it happened and now we're telling you about it. It's not about the future. Now, it'll change your future. It'll impact your future. But you got to know what happened in the past. Reconciliation took place over 2,000 years ago now. My goodness, folks. And we received the ministry of reconciliation. You either got the ministry of reconciliation or you got the ministry of shunning. You can't have both of them. But please, folks.
Don't go so fast. Say that again.
You either got the ministry of reconciliation or you've got the ministry of shunning. You can't have them both. So that's why we're going through this letter, folks, is because it is such a great demonstration of what we've been freed from. Now, what we were all freed from was 2,000 years ago, but many of us have been freed from Christianity. Dare I say it? We've been freed from Christianity. Yes, we've been freed from every form of religion. And we don't practice any religion. We let the gospel do its powerful work in the CPR, the consistent, persistent, repetitive nature of hearing this good news, folks. It is power to your of salvation to your soul. It gets your mind to thinking right. It gets you to where that shunning would never be in your vocabulary if you've got the gospel there. Show me somebody that practices shunning, and I'll show you somebody that does not understand the gospel in one iota of its true nature.
And so it is, family, that we must leave you. Remember, the concepts of heresy and blasphemy were invented by religion for the sole purpose of defending doctrines that could not defend themselves. Don't forget to visit http://www.theteacherwithin.com and order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Minaminiki. I'm an Amazon Prime user, and this book is the only 5-star product I have ever seen on Amazon. I know there must be others. I just haven't seen them. It's the best book touching authentic spirituality I have ever read. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you have received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember, the cash is not the only way that you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area? It is easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details when, where, and why, and we will make it happen. So now, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Mike Williams, right here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Thank you guys for listening today. Let us know your response. We hope that this has been an encouragement. And let me say to you, to those of you who have been shunned, disfellowshipped, maybe in the past, and maybe just simply because of the gospel that you embrace, we encourage you, don't respond in kind. You don't have to do that. And also, our heart is with you, that your heart becomes repaired. Your heart becomes healed and whole based on the power of the gospel that you embrace yourself. We love you so very much.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, it doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only
better.